Okay, so what we're seeking is the standing wave patterns on a sphere's surface, which turn out to be eigenfunctions of the angular momentum squared operator. We're going to call those solutions YLM, and they're going to apply then to any problem where the potential just depends on distance from the origin. In order to get there, we prove 57 commutation relations. And, I don't know, there are 54 of them. We're not going to use all of these. We could have just focused on the L angular momenta equations. But I think it's important to recognize that something fundamental is going on here, that L is really, in terms of this slot, is really just acting like any other vector would act. Any vector will do the same thing. And the reason for that is that L, in some sense, generates rotations. So if you have a rotation about the x-axis, then a y vector is going to pick up a z component. If you have a rotation about the x-axis, then a z vector is going to pick up a y component. And something like that is what's going on. We're not going to pursue this very much, but that's the fact that's behind all of this stuff. And similar things that we're not going to pursue, there was a problem that I didn't assign for homework that showed that momentum generates translations, and it turns out that the Hamiltonian generates time displacements. Okay, but that's neither here nor there. That's just what's behind these simple sorts of commutation relations, that vectors go like this and scalars commute with the angular momentum. Okay, so we showed on the second page that the momentum squared operator could be written in terms of the angular momentum squared operator like this. And you can relate that to the classical statement that the velocity vector could be related to the radial velocity and the perpendicular velocity. And the perpendicular velocity is tied in with the angular momentum. And so we can write the total velocity like that. Since angular momentum is conserved, if we're rotationally symmetric, we end up then with the centrifugal potential, which I hope you all remember from mechanics. So we're going to have exactly the same thing occurring in quantum mechanics. We're going to, in a second, think about this without the h-bars in it, just because it's a little bit easier to deal with. So here's the Laplacian written in terms of the radial part and the angular part. So if you look up Laplacian from E&M, there were derivatives with respect to r, and then there were derivatives with respect to angles. And all of the derivatives with respect to angles were 1 over r squared. They needed to be that way in order to have the units work out. So that's another way of getting at the angular momentum operator. On the third page, we derive lots of formulas for what L was in terms of derivatives with respect to theta and phi, and none of those are memorable. None of those are going to be useful. The only one that is memorable and useful and you should remember is this guy, which I hope kind of makes sense. That is to say, rotations around the z-axis are just changes in phi, and so we're going to have a simple formula. If we're looking at rotations around the x-axis, it's a complicated combination of theta and phi, and that's why we have a complicated formula for what Lx is, for example, in terms of theta and phi. So the only one that's simple is z, because that's what we've chosen our spherical coordinates to be around. Questions? So the plan is kind of like what we did with the raising and lowering operators. We could solve these ugly differential equations, but boy, and of course that's what we did with the simple harmonic oscillator. We actually solved those differential equations, but they're much worse for angular momentum compared to what they were with the simple harmonic oscillator. It's much better to solve the differential equations with operator methods. And then you get the bonus that you can do integrals without doing integrals, right? So just as you now know how to calculate, if I put an x wedged between two simple harmonic oscillator wave functions, you know what all those integrals are without, you know, cranking out a Mathematica. So similar, after all of this is done, we should be able to calculate the expectation value of Lx and Ly and Lz without breaking a sweat. Okay, so what we're after basically is to get these eigenfunctions of L squared and the z component of angular momentum without ever bothering to write them down. And I guess I was amused to find that it's hard to find them written down. I looked in several books for examples of formulas for these things. There's, in some sense, no reason to know them once you know the commutation relations. So what we want is these y's to be eigenfunctions of L squared, and it's going to turn out that's what the eigenvalue is of L, and mostly we'll be dealing with the dimensionless version, so the h bar squared, which is just there to have the units work out, and the corresponding angular momentum in the z direction is h bar m. So plan is to find those things using kind of raising and lowering operators. And these things come in bunches. That is to say, if we... Okay, so there's kind of a shorthand that's going to prove to be useful. If L squared is equal to h bar squared LL plus 1, that's hard to say. But it's basically the same thing as saying that the total angular momentum is just h bar L, right? I'm kind of neglecting that plus 1, which is really there. So when I say the angular momentum is L, what I'm really saying is the angular momentum is the square root of LL plus 1. So if the angular momentum is L, how that angular momentum is oriented in space is somewhat limited, right? So we could have all of the angular momentum in the z direction, in which case m would equal L, and we could have all of the angular momentum in the minus z direction, in which case m would be minus L, and we should have things in between. And our plan is to make an operator which will give us angular momentums with all different z components that we'll be able to step from one to another. So we're looking then for something, for example, called L plus. When it operates on y, it's going to give us something that's proportional to one step higher. And similarly for L minus, it's going to change the z component of the angular momentum. It's not going to change the value of the total momentum. It's only going to change the value of the z component. So it's just giving us the same vector oriented differently in space. Okay, so what's required in order to make this work? Well, in order not to change an eigenvalue, what we said, for example, for the Hamiltonian, if Q commutes with the Hamiltonian, then Q times psi is not going to change the corresponding energy eigenvalue. So this operator L plus, if I don't want it to change, if I don't want it to change the total angular momentum, it's going to have to commute with it. Right? So if that's the case, we're guaranteed that this quantity has the same eigenvector, eigenvalue of L squared as the original y did, and the original y had this as its eigenvalue. In order to have stepping, what we needed was When we commuted the Hamiltonian with our operator Q, we got lambda times Q. And what we showed is the result is that Q times psi has an energy eigenvalue that is the original one plus lambda. So what we're going to want then is to have something that changes the value of the z component of angular momentum. And we're going to want it to change it by 1 unit. So if we can come up with operators that do this, that would go up, and similar operators that go down, we'd be all set. Okay, so what works? Well, this is easy. Right? Something that commutes with L squared is easy because L squared is a dot product of two vectors. So any combination of L's will commute with L squared. Okay, so that guy's going to be easy. The second one, yeah, it's probably just as easy to write out and see that it's going to work. So if I take x plus I L Y, let's work out what we're going to get. And do you really want the H bars? I don't want the H bars. They just take time to write. So I'm going to deal with the dimensionless versions.
Why did you choose L plus to be what you chose it to be?
Well, we'll see if it works or not.
But like, why would you guess that one, I guess, in the first place?
Well, I'm not sure I have a good answer for that, just as I don't have a good answer for why we found that A was equal to x plus the derivative with respect to x. You can make some arguments about why this is a reasonable choice that have to do with factoring. So you might remember for the simple harmonic oscillator, we said that basically it was x squared plus p squared, and so we could factor it into x plus ip and x minus ip, kind of, if we ignored the commutation. And the same sort of thing is going to apply here. We can write L squared as Lx plus Ily times Lx minus Iy plus Lz squared if we ignore the commutation. And so that's kind of what's going on here. So just as we could for the simple harmonic oscillator kind of factor it, you know, if we closed our eyes and thought classically, same thing applies here. Historically, I don't know exactly who figured this out.
So we're just proving that this works.
We're going to prove that this works. Okay, so these guys are out of order, right? So, well, so this is 3, 1, 2. So it's a, so this is 3, 1, and what belongs over there is 2. So that's a cyclic permutation of 1, 2, and 3. So these guys are going to commute to I times Ly, which is the 2 component. And these guys here, so this is 3, 2, well, those are out of order, right? That should be, in order for this, well, this is not a cyclic permutation. So we're going to get minus I L1. Oops, and we had this I that was there all along. So I times I is minus 1, so this is Lx plus I Ly. And if I put plus or minus here, all it's going to do is to change this sign here to plus. And if you think about what that is, it's going to be minus Lx minus I Ly. So the upshot is, so L plus or minus is going to be Lx plus or minus I Ly, and it's going to do exactly what we said. Give me a function and I can move it around. I can raise it or lower it any way I want. Okay, but I hope it's clear, I can't raise it beyond what L is, right? Because you can't have more Z angular momentum than you have total angular momentum. Right? At best, the biggest possible component of Z angular momentum would be when the whole thing is aligned with the Z axis. So we can't raise this thing forever. It must be that there is some value of M, and let me just call it K, which is annihilated by the L plus operator. And similarly, we can't have a whole lot of negative angular momentum, right? We can't have the Z component more than minus the total angular momentum. So there must be some maybe I'll call it minus J, which equals zero. And there must be an integer number of steps that connect those things. Okay, so how do we get there? So first of all, let me tell you what I'm not going to do. So what we did for the simple harmonic oscillator is we looked at the equation that A operating on some function was annihilated, and then that had to be the ground state. And that was a first order differential equation, and so we could solve it. And we found out that psi was proportional to e to the minus 1/2 x squared. And we could do exactly the same thing if we wanted to with angular momentum, except it's kind of ugly, right? Because these L operators are ugly, if I try and find the function of theta and phi, which are annihilated, it's doable, but it doesn't seem particularly pretty or obvious to me. You get, cotangents and things like that in your differential equation that you need to solve. So instead, my plan is to give you an infinite number of solutions and then kind of show you how they work. And also maybe kind of clue you in on to what these solutions look like. Okay, so how do I find an infinite number of solutions? Well, I'm going to kind of arbitrarily look at A dot R. So A is a constant vector, and R is usually R. I'm going to look at A dot R to the L. So this is just a linear component, a linear combination of x, y, z to some power. And we'll find that there are lots of values of A which will automatically give us eigenfunctions of L squared. Okay, so how are we going to do that? Well, let's take a look at this formula here. So this formula for the Laplacian, I can apply pretty easily to this function. So for example, the derivative with respect to x of this, right, the L comes down, I get A dot R to the L minus 1, and then when I take the derivative of the inside, I get AX. And if I take the second derivative, I just get AX squared. So the Laplacian operating on this is going to give me AX squared plus AY squared plus AZ squared, all times L, L plus 1, A dot R to the L minus 2. Okay, and notice that this thing will be 0 if AX squared plus AY squared plus AZ squared is 0. And usually that's a pretty rare thing that for to happen. But if A, for example, was equal to this, then we're going to get 0. So it's super important that you recognize that every time else in this class where we've had something like that, we haven't had squares, we've had magnitude squares. We had complex conjugation. We don't have complex conjugation here, right? There's nothing, nothing that we've done has been complex when we derived this. Okay, so what is this factoid bias? Well, a dot r to the l, if we pull out the r dependence, the radial dependence, that's the distance r to the l times some function of what's left, which is just functions of angles. And if we pull out the r's, all that's left of r vector is angles, and so we have some ugly combination of angles in that function of theta. And if we plug and chug through this equation, what we have now is that 0 equals the Laplacian of a dot r to the l, and it also has to equal what we would get if we took these derivatives. So if we take those derivatives, the first time we're taking two derivatives, so we're going to get l minus 1 times r to the l minus 2 times f, and then I'm supposed to take 2 over r times the first derivative, so that's going to be 2l r to the l minus 2 f. And what I have left over then is minus the unitless version of angular momentum squared operating on f. So this is all angles, so to the r to the l is going to come out divided by r squared. And notice that r to the l minus 2 is a constant here, so I can pull that out. I can combine these two terms to give me ll plus 1. So if I bring this negative term over to the other side of the equation, what I've got then is that the dimensionless version of l squared operating on f is equal to ll plus 1 of f. Okay, so we've just found an infinite number of solutions to the eigenequation for the total angular momentum squared. It's anything like that. And this particularly simple example, if you think about what this is going to give us, it's going to give us x divided by r plus iy divided by r. So these things are equal to sine of theta times cosine of phi plus I sine of phi. So this is equal to sine of theta e to the I phi. So one particularly nice solution of this is going to be sine of theta e to the I phi to the L. So kind of physically, what does that solution look like? Well, it's going to be zero at the poles, where sine of theta is equal to zero, and it's going to be big at the equator. And there's going to be, because between zero and 180 degrees, sine is positive, there are going to be no nodes in the theta direction. So all of the oscillation is occurring in the phi direction. Okay, and I hope, since it's very easy to operate with the LZ operator on this, I hope it's clear that LZ, the dimensionless version of F, is just going to bring down the power of phi, so it's going to be LF. So this is a case where the Z component of angular momentum is L, and the total component of angular momentum squared is LL plus 1. So this is where the Z component of angular momentum is aligned as much as possible with where the total angular momentum is aligned as much as possible with the Z axis. And once we've got one of these, we can lower it and get as many more as we want, down to where we get the angular momentum in the Z direction being minus L, right? Because we can't have an angular momentum that is a z component of angular momentum that is minus a if the total length of the angular momentum is smaller than A. Okay, so that's one solution we have for our YLMs. There's another one that we can get for free, because there's another function that you know of which has that form and which satisfies Laplace's equation, right? So this is from E and M. You know that R to the L Legendre polynomial of cosine theta also solves Laplace's equation. And therefore the Legendre polynomial of cosine theta is going to satisfy this equation with exactly the same value of L. There's no phi dependence in that solution. So if I take the phi derivative of it, I'm going to get zero. Okay, so I've given you one solution in which the angular momentum in the z direction is equal to the total angular momentum, and I've given you another solution where there's no angular momentum in the z direction, so all of the angular momentum has to be in the x and y directions. Okay, questions? Now for the solution where we have the angular momentum all in the z direction, all of the oscillation was in the phi direction. This guy here, this one has lots of nodes as we go from pole to pole. So here all of the oscillation is in the theta direction. And the in-between things are going to be in-between, right? We're going to lose a node in theta and gain a lose a node in phi and gain a node in theta as we move our way down. So in the end, we're getting these standing waves on the surface of a sphere. So we can have oscillation either in theta, we can have oscillation in phi, or we can have oscillation in both. And we've looked at those kind of two extreme cases. Okay. So what we really need next is when we operate with L minus. So again, backing up to the case of the simple harmonic oscillator, when we operated with A on a state that had value n, what we got out was the square root of n times n minus 1. All we've shown so far is that if I use, if I raise some function which has eigenvalue m, I'm going to get something that is proportional to the state that has one more unit of angular momentum in the z direction. So what I need is exactly what this proportionality constant is. And you might remember the way we did this was for the A vector was by looking at the overlap between this guy and itself. So when we daggered that side, what we got was n A dagger A n, and this was something we could deal with. Okay, so plan is kind of the same. We're going to look at a state that is the raised version of one of these m values, and we're going to overlap it with itself, and we're going to get something that we hope we can evaluate. So the first thing to recognize is that just as the dagger of A was A dagger, the same thing is going to apply here, right? So if I take L plus and I take its Hermitian conjugate, These guys are by themselves Hermitian operators, so they just go to themselves. But here we have a complex number, and it's going to go to minus I. So the dagger of L plus is L minus. So we're going to be left with that sort of thing. Well, what is this sort of thing? Well, we started to kind of work this out before, but let's do it in perfect detail this time. So what we have here is Lx minus Ly times Lx plus Ly. And we certainly have the sum of squares, but we're going to have cross terms too. So this is going to give us Lx squared plus Ly squared. But in addition to that, it's going to give us this term here and this term here. But that's just the commutator of x and y, right? So this thing here, that's just going to be I times LZ. So in order to make this thing look like stuff that we know, let's add and subtract LZ squared. So then what I've got is L squared minus, from those two I's, LZ minus LZ squared. And those are all things that I know, right? Because I know that this thing is an eigenvector of L squared with eigenvalue that is L, L plus 1. And I know that these things are just going to give me M. So when that combination operates on this state, what it's going to give me is LL plus 1 from this term minus M squared times that original state. So I can rewrite this as minus m plus 1, and then maybe it looks a little bit neater. And of course, we know that these guys are normalized, so when I do that integral, I'm going to get 1. So the result of all of this in the end is just L plus 1 minus m plus 1. And that means then that L plus operating on M is going to give us the square root of L plus 1 minus M plus 1 times the state where we've raised things by 1. Okay, and similar equations for the lowering operator. So briefly, what does this get? Well, we can play all of the games that we played with the simple harmonic oscillator now with angular momentum. So what do you get if somebody asked you to calculate the expectation value of Lx, for example? Well, Lx is equal to 1 half L plus L minus, right? So 0, right? Because this would raise it, it'll be orthogonal. This would lower it, this would be orthogonal. Right? We can calculate the expectation value of L squared. This combination is going to give us 0 because it's going to be doubly raised. This combination is going to give us doubly 0 because it's going to give us 0 because it's doubly lowered. But these terms here are going to contribute, and we have to actually do a little bit of work to figure out what that is.
So in this, the coefficient for to make the things proportional? Is that plus or minus in the M?
Yes.
Okay. So that's where it goes for the different ones. Okay, whether it's plus or minus L. That's the only thing that changes between them.
Yes. Yep. So, I mean, this should amaze you, right? Because we don't even have formulas for what these functions are, because they're moderately ugly. Mathematics could tell you what this function is, but I couldn't tell you what this function is. And this thing is ugly. Some ugly differential equation that we'd have to take. And then we'd have to integrate it. But we don't have to do any of that. We can answer these questions just by using the raising and lowering operators.
N is an eigenfunction, is that correct?
Yeah, so we have the usual subscript problem, right? So these functions are really y of Lm, and it'll be awfully convenient to bring those subscripts up and label them like that. So I wasn't even bothering to show the L subscript because it's not changed, right? The whole name of the game was not to change the total angular momentum, but just change its orientation. I have stated, I'm not sure I've really proved it very well, the range of possible values of M is from L to minus L. It's not, the proof's in the book. Maybe I'll do it. Now, it'll be a long time before we come back to this. I don't know. So my wife's leaving early.